Today on Maine Calling, innovative new businesses in Maine. Maybe there's something in the water or in the pine-scented air, but Maine has long been fertile territory for entrepreneurs. In fact, data shows Maine has the highest one-year success rate for new businesses in the nation. 83% of startups here are still going 1 year on. There are many reasons for this, and one is all the organizations, incubators, and agencies here to help entrepreneurs get started and help them grow. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss the startup culture in the state, and we learn about some of the innovative new companies in our backyard. We'll find out about Startup Maine Week, which kicks off May 14th, and the Maine Entrepreneurs Summit on May 16th. And our guests will answer your questions about entrepreneurship in Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. By Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. When you hear the word startup, you might think of Silicon Valley, but there is a strong startup culture here in Maine, with many entrepreneurs finding ways to turn innovative ideas into actual businesses. And there is an active network of programs and support systems, incubators for people looking to start a business. My guests today are part of that network. Tom Kittredge is board chair of Startup Maine and senior investment officer for the Maine Technology Institute. Christopher Wolfel is associate vice president and head of entrepreneurship and venture creation at the Rue Institute. And Tom Rainey is executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs. Join that conversation. Do you have an idea for a business but don't know where to start? Or are you a founder of a startup and you have a story to share? You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Chris, there seems to be a lot of startup activity in Maine right now. People coming up with new ideas for companies and making those ideas a reality. Is that just sort of like a general sense, or is that actually happening? Are startups on the rise in Maine?
From my perspective, it's definitely on the rise, and I think it's fueled by a combination of folks realizing how accessible starting businesses has become with things like cost of computing going down and the tools available, but also an influx of folks that have moved to the state over the last few years from, you know, escaping other traditional technology hubs and saying, hey, I want to go somewhere that I enjoy my day-to-day life and my working environment. So I think we're seeing both of those trends kind of come together. And, you know, we see it year over year with the increase in applications to our programs from all over the world. Our last cohort had companies from as far as Chile to as close as Portland. So it's definitely
you
growing.
Say your last cohort. What is the program that they're applying to, the entrepreneurship program?
Yeah, so we run a few different programs here at the Rue Institute at Northeastern, but the most recent is our Future of Healthcare Founder Residency, where we partner with Northern Light Health, Maine Health, and the Maine Venture Fund to attract and retain high growth companies trying to solve healthcare issues in the state.
All right. Well, Tom Kittredge, I'm going to start with you next, the first of the two Toms. You're with Startup Maine. And your organization focused specifically on helping startups. Tell us how you define a startup. It's not just any business or company, right? There's a more specific definition of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. It's a great question. I think, you'll find different definitions across the place, but for me, really what the essence of a startup is a desire to scale. So a desire to grow beyond just, being a business of a few employees and kind of a lifestyle business and really aspiring to scale, to grow as a business and to have a large impact across not just the state of Maine, but across the nation and potentially internationally. So I think that's really a critical aspect is the speed at which you're looking to grow the business.
So we know that in Maine, for example, 99% of the businesses are small businesses, and many are people who work for themselves. That's not what you're talking about when you're a startup, somebody who's gone off to do their own thing, but has no plans to grow, just wants to work for themselves. You're talking about somebody who wants to grow.
Exactly. And to be clear, small businesses are the backbone of Maine's economy and are, a really critical and vital and amazing, form of business. But yes, generally startups are considered to be those businesses that are looking to really scale and grow. And they can come from a variety of industries ranging from, IT and information technology to aquaculture to forestry and agriculture. So it's not just, I think sometimes people conceptualize startups as just being in the tech space, but there's definitely startups, across industries. But it's really that aspiration and vision of growing and scaling.
And what does Startup Maine do to help people get their business off the ground?
So Startup Maine, our mission is really to champion Maine startup scene. And there's an amazing startup scene here. And I think as Chris touched on, it's only been growing over the past 4 to 5 years. So one of the exciting things that we're offering just next week is we're doing something called Startup Maine Week. So we're hosting a series of events starting on Tuesday, running through Friday, primarily in Portland, but there'll be events across the state that are really focused on sharing success stories, educating folks on what it takes to start a startup and also to scale a startup, on some of the pitfalls and challenges, but also on all the resources that exist across the state. So if folks are interested, I'd encourage them to go to startupmaine.com and see the program and get tickets there. But beyond, this particular week, we hold regular networking events to allow people to come into the ecosystem. And we also hold, various marketing events, and even we'll bring people on trips. For example, we brought a group of startups out to California for a networking event out there a few years ago. So really looking to just grow and champion in Maine startup scene.
All right, and Tom, what does the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs do to help entrepreneurs really take off?
So we're one of the old timers in the group here. We were started back in 1997, and we've grown to 7 different programs. So we work with both startups and scale-up businesses. At any given time, we may have 100 companies going through our different programs. So Top Gun, which is our sort of the signature program that we're best known for, it's sort of a boot camp style program, over 15 weeks, and we're delivering that right now in 4 different locations around the state. So just as you just heard, next week is Startup Week. This is Startup Week for us, as in addition to next week, because we have regional pitch-off events that are going on all around the state this week, and they'll culminate in sort of the grand finale, Maine Entrepreneur Summit, which is going to be next week on May 16th on Thursday at USM, and that's a pitch competition. But I'd hasten to say that the Top Gun program isn't just about the pitch; it's really about going through that 15-week program, really understanding your business and understanding your unique value proposition. So yeah, so and we started working with scale-up businesses about 7 years ago, and launched a network of food accelerator programs to help food, particularly Maine food companies, accelerate to the next level into national markets.
Well, I'll ask all of you this, but I'll stick with you here, Tom, for a moment. After all these years of doing this, it sounds like since 1997, you said, so more than a quarter century of doing this work, is there a secret sauce? Are there a number of questions one might want to ask themselves when they have an idea and they're thinking, can I make this into a successful and growing business? Are there questions you say to people, ask yourself this before we move forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I would say I've been doing this for 30 years, and not all the time in Maine. I've been here for 8 years. But the first observation I would make based on those years of doing this is that entrepreneurship really isn't for everyone, and not everyone's cut out to be an entrepreneur, and that it requires a really high tolerance for risk, uncertainty. You need to be very patient, you need to be very flexible, open-minded, and adaptable. And so
it's not for everyone. I've seen a lot of folks attempt to launch companies when they really just didn't have those traits. So I just say that, you know, first and foremost. But the other thing is that's really important, particularly with all the resources that are available in Maine, is to understand that you don't have to do this alone. There are so many different organizations that are funded by the federal and state government, and you know, there are co-working spaces, there are mentor networks, and the one secret sauce that we have at the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs, and one of the benefits of being around for so long, is we've been able to cultivate a list of nearly 300 volunteer mentors that are willing to really roll up their sleeves and get involved and help as either lead mentors or coffee mentors to these startup companies. So that's really our secret weapon. That's the you know, armed with these experienced people who are willing to donate their time, that really gives our Maine companies an edge. And of all the places that I've worked around the country, Maine is the most collaborative place I've ever been.
Chris, what about you? Are there ideas that are better than others, and why?
I think I couldn't agree more with everything Tom said. Like that is perfect. But I think even before that, the question is, are you actually solving a real problem? Right? There's no shortage of folks that have an idea or technology that is really, really important to them. But if there's not enough of thems in the world, actually getting that to become a company that can sustain is impossible. So it's always, you know, for me is, are you solving a real problem? Who cares about that problem? And do they care enough to pay for it? Because if you're going to start a business, I said this to someone the other day is, you know, if you have four left feet and you're starting a shoe company for people with four left feet, you're not going to have a ton of customers, to my assumption, right? There might be data out there that disproves that and bring that to the table, but ultimately, you know, really focusing on, are you solving a real problem? And from there, then, you know, it comes down to people, talent, the wraparounds, et cetera.
Tom Kittredge, your turn.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with what Tom and Chris just said. And just to build off what Chris was saying, I think the number one piece of advice I'd give to somebody looking to start a business is to go talk to people, you know, go talk to potential customers, ideally strangers, because a lot of us have assumptions built into our business vision. And the more you can go out and conduct research, we call it customer discovery, you know, go and talk to prospective customers, find out what their needs are, find out what they desire. That is one of the most powerful ways I think you can really get a sense of whether or not there's potential traction to your idea. And then again, just to harp on something that Tom Rainey said, which is this idea that entrepreneurship can be a bit of a lonely journey. You know, it's a very time intensive, emotional experience. And so the more that you can build a support system around yourself, and that can be in the form of co-founders, that can be in the form of, you know, fellow employees, but it can also be in the form of mentors or business advisors. And there are a lot of resources out in the state. So definitely, you know, making sure that you have the right people around you to support the entrepreneurial journey, because it can be a tough one.
Calling in now, Anna Ford, who is CEO and co-founder of Book Clubs. Thanks so much for calling in, Anna. And I understand you helped found Book Clubs based on your own personal experience trying to run a book club. Tell us about that.
That is true. Thanks, Jennifer. It's really great to be here. And yes, long before Book Clubs was a startup venture, it was a website platform that we built to help my own personal book club get organized and stay together. And it was so successful for us. We opened it up to the public. And then I was here in Maine, and the response to us launching book clubs to the public was so strong. That's when we decided that we were solving problems for many, many book clubs, and became the startup business and venture that we are today in late 2019.
So explain it to us. What does Book Clubs do? If I want to start a book club, how would I use Book Clubs?
So Book Clubs is a community organizing platform that makes it very easy to start, manage, or join a book club. And it's a social network for readers in that respect. But if you were already managing a book club or in a book club, you would simply either download the app or go to bookclubs.com and create your club. And you'd be able to create kind of a private portal for your book club. You'd get a membership link that you can share with members to invite them to join, and then use the app to organize that membership, conduct polls to decide what you're reading and when you want to meet next, schedule meetings, track RSVPs, keep a library of books and digital shelving so that members can rate, review, and recommend books to one another, and really streamline communication between you and your members. So in a nutshell, that's how we help clubs either get going or stay organized if they've been a longstanding club. And if you're an individual reader, just thinking about joining a book club and experiencing the magic of book club, we also have thousands of clubs that are open to the public on the platform, and you can find the right club for you on bookclubs.com/join a book club.
All right. So because this is a show about entrepreneurship, I have to ask you, how does your business make money? Is there a membership fee? Do you have advertisers? Do publishers advertise with you? How does it work?
That's a great question, and one that is not always evident in the early days of entrepreneurship. And I think a big part of that tolerance to risk that Tom was talking about is being in it long enough to find a monetization strategy that is really going to work and be scalable. So at book clubs, we started off really just focused on building awareness of the platform and making sure that we were helping clubs get organized and growing organically without a business model at all. And then the first ways that we made money, we monetized was in partnerships with publishers and authors who paid to advertise and promote and sponsor their books to our clubs through the platform. We still have partnerships with publishers in that regard, but we also serve a growing number of corporate and enterprise book clubs that pay us for book procurement and fulfillment for their employees and advanced tech features and customizations for their corporate clubs. And our most promising and biggest revenue stream, really, we launched just over a year ago, and that is the ability for a club to pay for a premium subscription to access advanced organizational features. And that's been a really strong and growing and scalable revenue stream for us. We still offer core organizing features for free. That hasn't changed, but we've built new and exciting ones that now over 25% of the clubs on our platform are paying for.
Wow, Anna. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Anna Ford, the CEO and co-founder of Book Clubs. We're going to try to squeeze in one more call before we go to a break. Zachary, who's calling from the Penobscot Nation. And Zach, Neptune, you are one of the founders of Katahdin Kitchen in Veezy, I understand. How did you decide to open a restaurant specializing in indigenous foods?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So me and some friends and coworkers got together. And, you know, we've all been in the restaurant industry for most of our working careers. And, you know, we've all had a love of food and our culture. And, you know, we really wanted to just be able to marry those two concepts. And then with the Korean Dad location kind of being this restaurant incubator, we decided to try our hand, get a spot in there. And, yeah, and it's all worked out really well so far.
Well, this is great. And this is just this past year. And for those people who aren't familiar with your part of the state and don't know about the Korean Dad incubator, tell us about it. What is going on there that's so exciting?
Yeah, it's this awesome little spot in Veezy where just about every single day of the week is a different restaurant like operating. So, for example, Thursdays, we're there on Thursdays, so we're doing contemporary indigenous food. Wednesday is a set homemade sourdough pizza operation. Friday is they're called the Virgin Island Hotspot. They do, I think, a bunch of jerk chicken and stuff like that. Saturday is a Colombian place. So, yeah, it's all sorts of different types of cuisine that you can get any day of the week.
Wow. A real foodie might just go every single night, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Zach, so let me ask you, what are you hoping? You know, again, we're talking about startups and entrepreneurship. If I were to talk to you in 3 years, 5 years, what are you hoping to be able to tell me about Katahdin Kitchen?
I'd like to see us in either our own brick and mortar, you know, building restaurant in type of or a food trailer truck, one of those options. You know, we're really at this point, we're really trying to keep all of our options open to us. But for the future, we're most definitely looking to expand and to get into somewhere, you know, where we're a lot more established. Yeah, it's very beginning right now, but we're definitely very forward-looking.
Well, I've seen some rave reviews on social media. Thank you so much for calling in. That Zach Neptune, who started Katahdin Kitchen in VZ. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about startups in Maine, especially those that are innovative. My guest today, Chris Wolfel, who is head of entrepreneurship and venture creation at the Rue Institute. Tom Rainey, executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs. And Tom Kittredge, board chair for Startup Maine and senior investment officer for Maine Technology Institute. You can share your comments and questions with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Tom Rainey, I want to follow up on our last two calls, both about the book club, book clubs, and about Katahdin Kitchen. I think a lot of people hear the phrase startups, entrepreneur, innovation, and they think you have to be talking about something that's high tech or new or I don't know, somehow gee whizzy. And both of those are really sort of very practical, straightforward ideas. Let's start something that makes it easier for book clubs, or let's have indigenous food in the forefront. Not high tech ideas. Tom Rainey, yeah. is this what you see, that people can have a really sort of personal and not, you know, we're not talking about artificial intelligence or cybersecurity. We're talking about just a good idea.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, we work with a ton of food companies in Maine. As I mentioned before, 52 of them are going through our food programs right now. And a lot of them are just really passionate about, you know, making tofu or making tempeh, or, you know, they're basically following their hearts and their stomachs and, you know, doing something that they really love, they're passionate about. And actually, in the case of Katahdin Kitchen, one of the thoughts that came to mind was one of our mentors has worked with a Native American restaurant called Sous Chef, which is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he would be a perfect mentor for Katahdin Kitchen. So I'm really happy to hear about that company.
I've heard about that. When you say Sous Chef, it's S-I-O-U-X Chef, correct?
Correct. It's the Native American tribe. And they have like a 3-week waiting list to get into the restaurant, and they do a phenomenal job. So what we would be looking at is, you know, is there an opportunity to potentially for some consumer packaged goods? Is there a hot sauce that they're making or something that we could help package and sell nationally? You know, we don't generally work with restaurants directly, but if there's a consumer packaged good element to what they're doing, you know, that would be more applicable to the accelerator programs that we're operating. But in any case, I would love to connect Katahdin Kitchen with our wonderful mentor who's really helped the company out there at the restaurant in Minneapolis. And then go ahead, sorry.
Oh, go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say, I also really love the, you know, the Anna's book club's business idea, because, you know, basically it's solving a problem. You know, it's bringing people together and connecting people, especially at this time when there's so much, you know, isolation and sort of loneliness in the world, and it's created so many problems that, you know, she's really tackling something. And again, she's building on her passion, something obviously she's passionate about, and turning into a business idea. And love the idea that there's multiple revenue streams associated with that as well. So good for her.
Calling in now, Kristen Gwen Becker, who is CEO and founder of History IT. Thanks so much for calling in, Kristen.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about History IT. When did it start? How'd you get the idea? Tell us about it.
Sure. So I was a web developer and software person, what that was in the 90s. And then I took a pretty big left turn and went back to university to do a PhD in history. And when I finished, I was living in Chicago and I had this background in both tech and history and archives. And it was the seed of what became History IT. I founded it in 2011 when I was living in Chicago. And in 2014, I decided to prove my mother right. We all come home again and re-headquartered it here in Portland. So just a few years after we launched.
Wow. So what was helpful in helping you make that business a reality?
Oh, what was helpful? People, certainly mentors from a variety of organizations, the people that build your initial team, and as the company kept growing, just kind of really recognizing what skills you lack or are not so great at, and really finding, you know, smart, passionate people who care about your mission. In our case, our mission to save history. And just expand your team that way. Maine Technology Institute was critical in our early development, both with grants and development loans in launching our initial software products. So we're most grateful to them and organizations like them.
All right. Well, Tom Kittredge, before we say goodbye to Kristen, anything you want to add?
No, I've had the pleasure as somebody who works at Maine Technology Institute to work with History IT regularly, and they're an amazing company and a really great success story in Maine. So great to hear Kristen speak.
Well, Kristen, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck to you. Kristen Gwen Becker, the founder of History IT. We're going to go up to Alicia, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Alicia. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm Alicia LaFosse. I'm a micro-enterprise specialist for New Ventures Maine, and I cover the Mid-Coast region. And I have to say, we have been around for 45 years, so we might take the prize on that. But we help people in Maine start businesses. We've been doing it since 1978, and I just love hearing the stories of people who, you know, are ready for a career change or wanting to follow a dream or a passion, because, you know, every year we help about 400 aspiring entrepreneurs to, you know, go through that ideation stage through our courses, and we do offer all tuition-free courses. And one of the things, this week I was at a United Way celebration. I met Nancy Sheeran, who took our Venturing Forth class about 10 years ago. And it's a 12-week class that helps people vet their idea, go through the business plan experience, and she started her upholstery business and followed the footsteps of her father, you know, so taking something that she had as a skill and turning it into, you know, a thriving business. And she said the class changed her life, you know. So all of us in this ecosystem who work with entrepreneurs, we're really changing people's lives. And, you know, it's bringing in experts for, you know, just the different fields of marketing, accounting, insurance, finance, and helping them write their business plan. And so we will be offering that in September online.
Alicia, would somebody go to find out more about New Ventures Maine? What's your website?
Yeah, our website is newventuresmaine.org.
That's easy enough.
You can find it. It's super easy, and we're coming out with a new website very soon, so it's even going to look even better.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. Alicia calling from New Ventures Maine. I appreciate you calling in today. On the line with us now, Melissa LaCase, who is CEO and founder of Tanbark. And for full disclosure, we will mention that Melissa serves on Maine Public's Board of Trustees. Thanks so much for calling in, Melissa. Tell us about Tanbark. What do you produce, and what was the impetus for it?
So Tanbark produces a product called Type 3 Molded Fiber. It's been around for 100 years, but companies haven't had access to it who have lower volume orders. And by that, I mean, you know, order sizes of 20 million or less per year. And so we started a company 3 years ago that's innovative for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is our production lines are smaller, our tooling costs are less, and we can do more with the flexibility in terms of the shapes and colors we can add. So, so we produce Type 3 molded fiber. Again, been around for 100 years, but now companies that don't have, you know, 50 million parts or more have access to the material.
Well, Melissa, I was on your website, and for people who don't know what this molded fiber is, we're talking about the kinds of things you might take out from a restaurant in, right? I mean, and yours have really fun colors and things like that. And this is, you know, if you're going to get a hamburger or something from a restaurant, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to come in something that is compostable instead of putting plastic into the environment.
Correct. So with molded fiber, you can do a lot of secondary processes that can affect its compostability or recyclability. So each product needs to go through its own testing and validation for that. But what Tamberg is trying to do is introduce type 3 molded fiber to beauty, high-end electronics, medical devices, industries that haven't had access to the material before. A takeout container, you know, they produce millions upon millions of those a year, and we're really trying to open the material up for companies that have a need that's much less than that in terms of volume size.
That's so interesting, especially medical, because anybody who spent time in a hospital can see how much waste there is that is, or I mean, maybe waste is the wrong word, but how much is thrown away that's it's made of plastic. I know Tom Rainey wants to jump in here. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in and say, first of all, I'm really impressed by that story. It's awesome. But I wanted to let everyone know that we launched the first ever Food Tech Maine program last year as a pilot program to help companies that are involved with new emerging technologies that help the food industry in some way, shape, or form. And we've seen a lot of really interesting companies coming along with, you know, new packaging technology. So Ocean Farm Supply is one that comes to mind. Aaron Adams started this company and has developed this mesh material that replaces plastics in packaging shellfish, for example. And another company, Everything Seaweed, that's aspiring to replace PFAS, the liners that oftentimes are PFAS in our food containers, with a seaweed-based product that's very environmental. So just other examples of companies that are working in food tech in Maine. And we think there's a lot happening in that front, and we want to continue developing that pilot and growing it and breathing more life into that to augment the other things we're doing on the food front.
Melissa, returning to the story of Tanbark, I want to know if you have advice for others who are looking to start a successful company. Is it all about the right idea, hard work, luck? What would you say?
I would say it's a few things. One is, yes, you have to have an idea that resonates and also fills a need. You have to have the right team. And then this capacity to be okay with failure and learn from it. I think that's one of the biggest lessons I've taken away, is the ability to iterate and pivot and find new ways to solve problems you didn't even know existed when you started. And if a company is starting a business in Maine, the resources in Maine for startups are phenomenal. And Tanbark really benefited from a lot of them. And, you know, there's Maine Technology Institute, a fabulous organization helping companies try out new technologies and get started. I'm sure the two companies that Tom mentioned are in conversation with them. I'm almost positive. There's FAME, there's CEI, there's the Roux Institute. Tanbark was in the founder's residency there. Maine Venture Fund, there's the Maine Angels. We've just had such great experiences with the startup community in Maine and the groups out there that exist to support startups.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Melissa LaCase, co-founder of Tanbark. We're going to go to Gabrielle, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Gabrielle. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Yeah, my name's Gabrielle. I own a company called Mad Gabs, and it's an organic lip balm company. I moved to Maine in 1996. So I've been amazed, and Melissa just listed off all the resources I was, like, making a list of that I wanted to make sure I got it out there. But as a, like, decades-long entrepreneur here, and now I work with the kids starting businesses in the Yarmouth school system at the farmers markets, creating products and companies. That we're launching 6 companies in the next 2 months. Well, the kids are. I'm just helping them. But I just wanted to say that the evolution of the entrepreneur world in Maine has just continued to just surpass anything I can imagine. When I travel, I love to sort of tout our state and all the resources there are and all the innovation, and it just keeps getting better and better. So I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. I'm just, like, waving a flag from my little corner of the entrepreneur world, and I love watching the kids join in and all the resources that are available for them too. So yeah, so thanks for the conversation.
Gabrielle, I'm so glad you called into Maine Calling, and of course I know Mad Gabs, and I want to ask you about some of these businesses that young people are starting. Are you allowed to, or is it top secret, or can you tell us about some of them?
I can tell you about some of them, sure. Well, they're launching, the high schoolers are launching on May 23rd at the Yarmouth Farmers Market, and we've got a pickle company, We've got a couple body care companies, and they're making salves, they're making body butters, and the pickles are amazing. I helped the gal make her pickles last weekend, and then we also have a young artist who put her artwork on stickers and bags. So that's the high school group, and the middle schoolers have, we've got a sewer who's making totes, and we've got a jeweler, we've got a kid making glass out of art out of sea glass, and a t-shirt. So yeah, lots of fun things coming out of the kids' work.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you so much for the work that you do. We are going to take another break. We're talking about startups, entrepreneurship, and Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. What does it take to start a company and then grow it? What kind of resources are available to entrepreneurs in Maine? Our guest, Tom Rainey with the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs, Tom Kittredge with Startup Maine and Maine Technology Institute, and Chris Wolfel with the Rue Institute. Lots of calls and emails coming in. You can try to get through 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. I'm going to go to this email from Andrew. Andrew writes, "It seems your presenters are based south of Augusta. Many of us live in the other Maine. My guess is that many of our post-COVID residents live up here and are probably very interested in being a startup. Can remote locations be addressed?" So who wants to take that one, talking about Maine that is not considered southern Maine? Chris, you want to start?
I'll just add one thing, and then Tom's got some great programs that he'll probably share. But I think one thing that is a national trend is starting companies outside of the major tech hubs has shifted completely. Like if you wanted to raise capital 10, 20 years ago from traditional VCs, you had to go in person to meetings in Boston and San Francisco and New York. But the pandemic forced folks to get comfortable on Zoom and make investments and work with businesses outside of where they looked historically. So I think it's the best time, whether it's north of Augusta in Maine or even anywhere in the country, if you're not in a traditional dense city that's known as a startup hub, that the opportunity is now for folks to try to do that. But I know, Tom, you've got some specific programs that you guys run around, so maybe you want to share some of those as great resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so one of the silver linings to the whole pandemic is, the whole Zoom world we're living in now, and it was sort of the great equalizer in that, before that, we had to deliver our programs in really sort of population dense areas. And now with Zoom, we can deliver our programming more broadly around the state, which is awesome. But with our Top Gun program, we recognized that there was a gap in services and as it relates to Northern Maine and Eastern Maine. And so we partnered with the Northern Maine Development Commission to launch a Top Gun cohort that was made up of companies from Ellsworth, Holton, Machias, and the Caribou area. So, and we actually went up and did sort of the roadshow to try to drum up support and create a pipeline of companies there. And we were really just amazed by the outpouring of interest in the programs. We got over 20 applications for Top Gun from that region. So it's been really awesome, expanding out into other parts of the state. And, we work in all 16 counties around the state between all the different 7 programs we operate. So, but yeah, we're really conscious of the fact that we need to get our resources out beyond, the greater Portland area.
Tom Kittredge.
Yeah, I think Tom and Chris both touched on a couple of really key aspects. I did want to highlight there are a variety of organizations that are specifically focused on supporting entrepreneurs in parts of the state that aren't Portland. So, for example, there's Upstart, which is up in the Bangor area. There's Dirigo Labs, which is in the Waterville area. So there are some organizations that explicitly are focused on supporting the startup scene. And there's some really amazing startups that are coming out of Northern Maine, out of Western Maine, out of Midcoast Maine. Book clubs, which we've heard a caller from, they're based out of the Rockland area. So, I think it's important to highlight that there's this conception that all startups are in the Portland area, and that's certainly not the case. And then with my Maine Technology Institute hat on, I just, MTI, our mission is to support economic development, and specifically innovation all across the state. And we provide funding to every single county in the state. We're not Localized in any part of the state. You know, our resources and our funding is really intended to support all 16 counties in the state. So there are, I think, a lot of organizations that are actually really working with a lot of intent to ensure that resources go to every part of the state of Maine.
Calling in now is Sam Chamberlain, who is co-founder of Wicked Clean Bins. Sam, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
Tell us about Wicked Clean Bins.
Yeah, so Wicked Clean Bins is a curbside waste bin cleaning service. So the day after your trash is picked up, we come by with our purpose-built trailer, clean your bins. And the way that we do that is with 185-degree hot water, a ton of pressure, and that's getting all of the nasty stuff that's in your bins, all the bacteria, disease that lives in your bins. And then the thing that I think is the coolest part is we recapture all of that dirty water. And so a big part of our mission is to make sure that that contaminated water is not entering into our waterways. And so we're recapturing that water and disposing of it safely. You know, I live near Casco Bay and know that my storm drains go right into Casco Bay. And so I wouldn't want anything that's in my bins to get into Casco Bay.
Sam, how long have you been in business and how's it going?
Yeah, so we just crossed our 12-month mark last month. And so we're just entering our second season. It's been amazing. We've made some really, really amazing partnerships with folks around the community. And then just, you know, being boots on the ground and chatting with neighbors and learning a little bit about what we can do to support folks. But also just to have, you know, to get to see really cool parts of Maine and meet people that I probably never would have met.
At what point will you consider your business to be a success? What measures are you gauging? Where do you hope to go?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, our hope is eventually to expand to be able to cover more than the 11 communities we cover right now. You know, we'd love to offer our services across the whole state of Maine. I think the measure for success for me is actually just starting a business. You know, I think that's the hardest part, and growing a business is, of course, incredibly difficult and requires a ton of time and resources. But, you know, I would say I'd call us a successful business. You know, we're out here doing the work and meeting folks. You know, of course, we can't wait to continue to grow. But I think also just, you know, being able to be a part of the community and doing some really cool work with our neighbors has been amazing.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for calling in. Sam Chamberlain co-founded Wicked Clean Bins. We'll go to Harry, who's calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Harry. Go ahead.
Hey, hi, Jennifer. Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. I recently retired from a company called Fluid Imaging Technologies. Actually, now it's called Yokogawa Fluid Imaging Technologies. And the company, we invented an imaging flow cytometer. It was actually invented at Bigelow Laboratories for oceanography right here for biological sciences right here in Maine. And to get the company started, we were able to get a grant from the Maine Technology Institute. And without that grant, the company really would have never started. And we also got a great grant from National Science Foundation. But the other wonderful thing that MTI helped us with was once we realized that the product was taking off, we've actually sold the FlowCam in over 65 countries in every single continent in the world. And then the company was sold to a Japanese company and still maintaining its business here in Maine. But what was great about MTI was that MTI then helped us develop the instrument where we made the next generation FlowCam with a very large unsecured loan. And really without that loan and without the partnership of MTI, the company would have floundered. And I really don't know if we would have ever actually made it. And we're now in our 25th year. So thank you, MTI. And, you know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful story about the support we had from the state of Maine.
Harry, thanks so much for calling. And before you go, of course, I'm going to toss to Tom Kittredge at MTI. Tom, your response.
I mean, I think that's a perfect example of the sort of story we hope to hear, you know, at MTI and Maine Technology Institute. And just to give a brief summary for folks who might not be aware of MTI, we're a state-funded nonprofit whose mission is really to support innovation in Maine with the underlying goal of economic development. So Harry just kind of touched on those two core pieces that we're looking to support. So innovation And then, you know, leading to economic development. So hearing that all those jobs are still existing in Maine 20 years later, that's exactly what we want to see. So that's just a tremendous story. And, you know, if folks are interested in exploring Maine Technology Institute funding, and like Carrie touched on, we offer grants and also occasionally we'll do loans and equity. Just visit our website at mainetechnology.org, which goes through the different criteria for getting MTI support.
Well, Harry, thank you for calling with that great story of a successful Maine company, 20 years old. We're going to go to this email from Darian and Rachel with the Black Bear Soap Company. I recently started a handmade soap company with my spouse. We make soap that features Maine black bear tallow. We are interested in your panel's advice on how to break through in a pretty saturated market and how to make the transition from selling to friends and family, et cetera, to a broader customer base. Tom Rainey, I'm going to turn to you on this one.
Okay, well, this is going to sound really self-serving, but I think that they should go through the Top Gun program because it's a very rigorous 15-week program that's going to help them really go down into what they have versus what's already out there in the market and to explore different pathways to getting that product out there. And so we would match them up with a mentor or a group of mentors and work with them on everything from, you know, packaging, design, basically their strategy for raising funding and, sort of all of the above.
Do you hear from these small business owners, Tom, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. When am I going to find the time for Top Gun? And what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, we really work hard to accommodate their schedules with the, you know, when we offer the program, we actually do quite a bit of Saturday workshopping and we try to combine as much as we can to, be, you know, accommodate their schedules. And then, as I mentioned before, we also do provide some content, you know, via Zoom. So, but we have, we have calls like this, every week from entrepreneurs who want to grow their businesses and are looking for, the resources to do that. One of the challenges that we have here in Maine is we have such a wealth of organizations and support that oftentimes it's a challenge for them to understand, where they even begin with this process. So we like to think that there's sort of this continuum of care here in Maine between those organizations that will just help you with an idea, basically fleshing out an idea like the Small Business Development Center or the Senior Corps Retired Executive SCORE, where they'll sit down with you and help flesh out just an idea versus the organizations that actually have formal programs for companies that have formed and are really throwing everything into getting a company started. So there's, this continuum of care includes, the Ruin Institutes and the MTIs and, many other players. We oftentimes refer to them by their acronyms and it's a little bit of an alphabet soup. So trying to help the average person on the street understand how to, to navigate the system is really important.
Chris, and speaking of the continuum of care and all the different organizations that are out there to help and to encourage entrepreneurship in Maine, we haven't even mentioned Maine's universities.
Yeah, well, and the universities are such an asset to companies because normally the founder or the founding entrepreneur gets glorified as the person, but it takes employee 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to 7,000 to make these things work. And, the incredible talent that's here in the state at all levels across, the University of Maine systems, the Colby Bates and Bowdoins and UNE. And, I'm sitting here on our campus at the Ruin Institute as part of Northeastern University. And we have over 725 graduate students here in computer science, data science, analytics that are here because they want to be part of the next wave of the economy. And, our portfolio of 70 companies, the things that are going to help them survive and grow is, can they get the right talent to build it? And can they get the right customers? And that's where, tapping into all of the great things happening around the state is important. And I also think it'll help with, retaining great talent to the state. It's no secret, our demographic has had some challenges over the last few years of young folks leaving to other markets. And I think we can build and continue to build a thriving startup ecosystem. We're going to see not only more retainment of this talent, but also more folks either boomeranging back or picking, Maine is where they want to build their careers, their lives, and make an impact on the entire economy.
And Tom Kittredge, we only have about a minute left, but Chris Wolfel talking about the role of the universities. I'm thinking about the Advanced Manufacturing Center up at UMaine. I'm sure you all work hand in glove with them.
Yeah, I mean, they're a tremendous resource and definitely something that has been of great, great value to a lot of different companies pursuing manufacturing, and they do some really amazing work up there. So definitely if you're in the manufacturing space, they're great at helping folks develop prototypes or, early stage, what we call minimum viable products, all the way through, refining your process and production skills. So definitely a great resource. Another resource in that space is the Maine Manufacturing Extension Partnership, who also offer a lot of guidance and support for folks in the manufacturing space. So I think this gets to this larger idea that there's a really robust ecosystem of support organizations, regardless of what industry you're in, whose mission is to support entrepreneurship here in the state of Maine.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining me today. And hopefully, there are a few people listening who are the entrepreneurs of the future. The voice you just heard, Tom Kittredge, board chair of Startup Maine and senior investment officer for the Maine Technology Institute. Christopher Wolfel is associate vice president and head of entrepreneurship and venture creation at the Roux Institute. And Tom Rainey, the executive director of the Maine Center for Entrepreneurs. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, and we had additional help from Allison New. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, motherhood and mental health, the challenges mothers face, and what help is available. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.